Support for this podcast comes from Sunshine Cottage's Noche del Sol, a fiesta kickoff event with Mexican food, entertainment, and Delaritas, plus a raffle and auctions to benefit the school for deaf children. March 26th, 6 p.m. More at sunshinecottage.org.
From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, are students at Prairie View A&M again being targeted with voter suppression tactics? And there are 100 million of them. They are the non-voters. Why do they take a pass on democracy?
We asked non-voters, you know, why don't you vote? And the number one reason that people gave was that they didn't like the candidates.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. As early voting is underway in Texas for the Super Tuesday primary, there is no early voting happening on the campus of Prairie View A&M in Waller County in southeast Texas. Prairie View A&M is a historic black-serving university founded in 1876. It's the second oldest public institution of higher learning in Texas. It's also long been the center of a debate over voting rights in Texas for African-American college students, which mirrors much of what has been happening across the state. In the past, students at Prairie View A&M University were required to complete a residency questionnaire to prove their eligibility to vote. Also, at one point, the campus was carved into separate districts to illegally dilute their voting strength, and some students were arrested when they tried to cast ballots, accused of improper voting. The latest alleged voting suppression tactic is House Bill 1888, passed in the last legislative session, which ended mobile early voting. This means, right now, there is no early voting location on campus at Prairie View A&M. And this comes as a lawsuit is still being litigated over the 2018 midterm elections that accused Waller County officials of improperly limiting early voting on campus then. Leah Aiden is the Deputy Director of Litigation for the NAACP Legal Defense Fund.
In 2020, for the primary elections, the county, under the purported justification of new legislation, HB 1888, it has once again denied access to on-campus early voting for Prairie View students. It's done so because it believes that it, under the law, doesn't have resources to provide essentially more than one polling site, temporary polling site, early voting site in Prairie View, in which Prairie View A&M University is located. And in order to apparently satisfy and meet the needs of everyone in Prairie View, they believe that if there's only one site, it can't be on campus. It is off campus at a place that other people in Prairie View can go to. And we, in the context of the litigation and even outside of it and the advocacy that we're doing, even still, you know, we contest that the county doesn't necessarily have the resources to provide more than one site in Prairie View. And we certainly contest that the on-campus site wouldn't be accessible to anyone if they were only forced to have one site in Prairie View. And that's because what we've learned through the litigation is that the university, it's been in the county since the mid to late 1800s. In the more recent era, it is one of the most important institutions in the county, and oftentimes there are public events held on campus where hundreds, even thousands of people attend. So the idea that the on-campus site is not accessible to the wider public, we reject. And moreover, we know that Prairie View students, who are some of the highest users of early voting in the county, who regularly use early voting, that the on-campus site is the accessible one for them. They, unlike any other resident in the county, do not have access to transportation, and they really rely upon on-campus voting in order to be one of the highest users of early voting in the county.
This bill that you referenced, House Bill 1888, it ended mobile early voting in Texas. That meant that we used to have early voting sites that maybe for a few days it was at one location and then it would move to another location to help as many people as we could to be able to cast their vote early in an election. Now, some people have said that that bill was passed simply because of issues like at Prairie View A&M University, which is a historic black serving college, and also at Texas State University, which was in San Marcos, where you've seen a high voter turnout. Is that what we're seeing now, that the end of early mobile voting is directly impacting what's going on at Prairie View A&M?
Well, we believe it's certainly impacting Prairie View students. We're not alone. HB 1888 is subject to two pending federal lawsuits. We haven't filed a lawsuit directly challenging HB 1888, but two other lawsuits have been filed, and one of the claims is that HB 1888 violates the 26th Amendment, which is the right that gave basically all college-age students, 18 to 21-year-olds, the right to vote. That has nationwide application, but it matters for college students in Texas. And we are seeing that under the guise of addressing purported problems or disparities in the once use of mobile voting centers, this requirement that if you open a branch site, it has to be open for a minimum number of days and hours, and that you have to standardize throughout the county, that the effect of that is to impact negatively college students, but also counties that have fewer resources, rural counties or others that don't have the resources to have multiple sites open for equal amounts of time over the two-week early voting period. We also believe that the HB 1888 doesn't limit the ability of counties to establish sites in places, the locations of sites in places that are accessible to as many people as possible and are useful to the people who use early voting. And so here, it's nonsensical for us and doesn't make a lot of sense that one of the locations that has been one of the highest used locations in the county, which is the student center, is one of the ones that they have now shuttered for purposes of early voting. And we do believe that it's part of Texas's long history and Waller County's very specific history of trying to dampen participation of these college-age and black college-age students.
So if you look at the long road that Texas has for trying to suppress African-American voting in Texas, if you look at that road, it goes straight through Prairie View A&M, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, the history there is sort of emblematic of what we're seeing nationwide. And frankly, every decade we see some new tactic or some revived old tactic being targeted at these students who frankly should be supported by the county and the state of Texas. I mean, going back to your last question, this is the university that challenged a questionnaire that was being assessed and used to limit participation of students in the 1970s. And that tactic was taken all the way up to the United States Supreme Court and established legal precedent that has nationwide application and really ensured that the 26th Amendment had teeth by providing that college-age voters can register and vote in the places where they go to school, in the places where not only are they being educated, but they are economically contributing to the community and should have representation and access to the political process. So this is a university, and the sacrifices of the students have really opened up the avenue of political opportunity for every other college student across the country and really given meaning to the 26th Amendment. And for Texas and for the county of Waller to continue again to try to not support but to suppress the power of this young population, the very group of people who should be learning to participate, who should be supported towards participating, it really is part of a very shameful record and one that continues into the present.
Leah Aden is the Deputy Director of Litigation for the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. They are representing students at Prairie View A&M, a historic Black serving university in Waller County, Texas, who say their right to vote is being restricted. While some are fighting for their right to vote, others are asking, why bother? There is a growing number of non-voters in Texas, citizens who are eligible to cast a ballot, but just don't. The Knight Foundation released a report this week titled The 100 Million Project, The Untold Story of American Non-Voters. They surveyed 12,000 persistent non-voters nationwide and aimed to understand the characteristics of non-voters. Why are they disengaged from the political process, and the effect that this group could have on the upcoming election if they just turned out to vote? Yvette Alexander is with the Knight Foundation.
This is something that's been an issue since the 70s. Voter turnout's been on the lower end, and particularly among certain groups. And so although the problem isn't new, I think the crisis that we have is that a lot of people don't understand these non-voters, as you found in your other work. So the problem in our mind is that we actually don't know much about this group, even though they're so large, they're so diverse, in their politics and in their reasons for disengagement, yet they're not polled. Most political polls focus on likely voters because everyone's focused on the horse race, and no one's focused on, you know, almost half of the electorate that's not voting at all.
What was the motivation behind your project and the idea that we have this big chunk of our population? They have, in a sense, remove themselves from the political conversation. They have no direct representation in government. And why is it that they, if they choose to do so, why is that something worth figuring out?
That's a good question. It's important to understand because the groups that participate most frequently in our elections processes, we call them active voters, they're the most consistent ones to come to the polls. They overrepresent certain groups and underrepresent others. So if you're college educated or above, if you're upper income, if you're part of older generations and age groups, you're more likely to be an active voter. Your voice is more likely to show up in terms of who's in our elected government. And groups that are not as active participating in our democracy are those who are, lower education, lower income, more likely to be younger and minority, for example. Because of those challenges, you know, Knight Foundation, our mission is to foster informed and engaged communities for a stronger democracy.
We typically see political groups saying if we could only get greater voter turnout, then we would have the result I would prefer. And they blame the fact that they are out of power or not able to have the policies that they want because the people don't vote. Does that stand up to what you're finding out when you look at the people who don't vote?
I think there is a notion out there amongst Democrats or those on the left-leaning side of the ideological spectrum that, you know, if non-voters all turned up to vote, that there would be, you know, an overwhelming kind of win for the Democratic Party. And that doesn't hold up very well in what we see, at least today. Perhaps that was historically true. But, things have changed or things are different in reality because, you know, we surveyed 12,000 non-voters nationally. And what we see is if we asked if you had to vote in 2020, who would you vote for? And they were pretty evenly divided between the reelecting Donald Trump and electing a Democratic Party nominee who's to be determined. It was only a 3% edge to the Democratic nominee, so pretty evenly divided. And then when you kind of break that down across battleground states, there are certain battleground states, sizable ones, where President Donald Trump would actually be the favorite amongst non-voters. And so it's unclear how it might actually affect the polls if everyone turned out, and particularly where they turn out.
But we're talking about such a huge number. It's not homogenous at all. This is a very diverse group that's just as fragmented and divided as the people who do vote, it seems.
That's absolutely right. It's 100 million people practically. So you're talking about a large group. In a lot of ways, they mirror the population of the United States in general. There are groups of non-voters that are engaged with politics. They're consuming news and information around politics. They have firm beliefs around, you know, key issues. And they're registered, and perhaps they've voted in the past, but for whatever reason, they're not voting today. And then on the other side, you have non-voters who are extremely disengaged from, you know, news and information around politics. They may not even have an opinion on some of the kind of key platform issues. They're not sure about candidates, and or they're not likely to be registered. So you do have quite a spectrum of folks when you think about levels of engagement or disengagement within the electorate. A few things unite them, though, that I would point out. So we asked non-voters, you know, why don't you vote? And the number one reason that people gave was that they didn't like the candidates. And then the second most common reason was that they felt their vote didn't matter. So that's what they said directly to us. We also learned about non-voters by comparing them with active voters that we surveyed. And it was interesting, the widest gaps there were related to trust in the election system. So non-voters were much more likely to distrust the electoral system in general. They weren't sure that votes were being counted accurately. They weren't sure if they voted that it would actually count towards anything. They weren't sure if elections represented the will of the people. And they were very confused or concerned by the concept of the Electoral College and how that works when, you know, certain candidates can win the popular vote and then others win the Electoral College. The other thing that united non-voters was lower engagement with news and information. Particularly about politics, but in general as well, as it's compared to active voters. So, for example, they consume less news kind of within their media diets. It's a little bit more weighted towards entertainment, social media, things like that, particularly as you get younger. And they also are more likely to rely on bumping into news and information rather than actively seeking it out. Voters are more likely to look up information that they want regarding politics or you know, seek out particular issues and what's happening with candidates and issues. And non-voters are not really doing that actively, but they hope to kind of bump into it as they go about their day from people, from social media, and things like that. And so that's a very different sort of way of engaging with information. And, you know, as a consequence, non-voters are more likely to tell us that they don't have enough information about candidates and issues in order to make a decision come election time.
You talk a lot about the media and about the news media in your research and what people go to, what they look for, what sites they visit, who they trust. It's all over the map, but it does make me wonder if there is a strong connection between how what the news thinks it ought to be doing and the services that it thinks it should be providing and what people actually want from the news when it comes to telling them about their government and democracy here. Particularly, we see a lot of news coverage focused on horse race issues and not so much about accountability when it comes to who's really following through on their campaign promises. And that seems to be something that a lot of the non-voters are interested in.
It is. And it's definitely something that they feel disappointed by. At least that's what they tell us in interviews. So that factors into feeling like their vote doesn't matter. Some in focus groups, they've told us, you know, it doesn't matter if so-and-so promises this or that. Like when they get elected, they either won't do those things or they're not able to do those things because of, you know, another party kind of counteracting them in Congress. And so they do feel like their vote doesn't matter in that way. And that's another distinguishing factor between voters and non-voters is non-voters are more likely to say that the decisions that are being made in Washington don't impact their lives personally. differently, whereas voters are connecting those dots a lot more. And so that points to, I think, some work that we have to do as a society to educate young people and also our adult population on, you know, the types of issues that, you know, are being brought forward in Washington, and what types of actions might be taken by elected officials that do, in fact, impact our daily lives. And interestingly, some of the populations that are probably most impacted by decisions made in Washington aren't connecting those dots currently.
Do non-voters, do they have a lack of faith in the election system? Do they fear, do they suspect that there's a rigging that is going on and that the entire system is corrupt and broken? And why would I want to be a part of that?
Yes, we do find that. So when we asked why non-voters have a lack of confidence that the elections represent the will of the people, non-voters were way more likely to say that they worry that the system is rigged than voters. And to be fair, there is some distrust, even amongst active voters in the political system. There is a dislike from active voters in the Electoral College and how that works. However, there are other things that might be at play in their lives that kind of counterbalance that cynicism or that skepticism. They're still out there voting, and non-voters maybe don't have the social networks that encourage them to vote, or perhaps the education on the process and how votes affect them. So I think that, you know, failing some of the other things that bolster the propensity to vote in their lives, the cynicism about the system is all that much more impactful.
You do have to wonder how this information can be weaponized by political parties, activists who can try to dampen voter turnout from one segment and try to increase it with another, and trying to inflame these or exaggerate these fears that elections are rigged and that your vote doesn't count. If that helps people who definitely want to disrupt American democracy.
I do think it's concerning to have a narrative around the elections being rigged. You know, as you were asking earlier, 27% of the non-voters we surveyed that lacked confidence in the electoral system said that they thought the system was rigged or corrupt. And that is something that's been floating in some of the media narratives in our political climate today. And so that's unfortunate because it really undermines, you know, certain groups' propensity to engage in the election system and in elected government. And, you know, that's a crisis for our democracy. We want people to, you know, have their voice heard and participate, you know, broadly and in deep ways in our democracy, both at a local level, you know, as well as nationally.
And Generation Z, Americans aged between 18 and 24 right now, how are they being impacted by this?
Yeah, that was one of the more interesting findings from the study, in my opinion. So we looked at 18 to 24-year-olds that were just a broad cross-section, a representative sample of 18 to 24-year-olds across the U.S. Some of them vote, some of them don't, some of them are registered, some of them aren't. And what we found was their interest in politics was much lower even than non-voters, certainly than active voters. They were less informed, less likely to engage with news, and less likely to be interested in voting in 2020, even than non-voters themselves. So, you know, you have to ask yourself, like, what is the future of voter participation in the United States? How can we reinstill a faith and confidence in our democratic system, in how our elected government actually functions, and you know, make a proposal, a pitch that's compelling to young people to be a part of this system? And the other question is, you know, young people, these 18 to 24 year olds, are much less likely to engage with traditional news or news even at all. If they're seeing news, it's in a scrolling feed situation. So it's a different type of information environment out there for all of us, but particularly for the youngest of us that are eligible to vote. And so, you know, there are questions around How do we help the 18 to 24 year olds feel informed on issues without asking them to do something that's wildly outside of their common behavior?
We see some Republican efforts to protect the vote, say they have to have voter ID, try to close mobile voting sites in Texas. Voter registration is something that's very difficult to do in Texas compared to other states. They try to make voting as difficult as possible. Is that something that is misinformed from the very beginning, that actually doing that, you actually are hurting a lot of different political point of views of non-voters? You're not actually targeting one type of individual, but you could actually be hurting your own party with those types of efforts.
Yeah, I think the study points to the fact that both parties have a lot to gain by, new registrants and new voters in our voting pool. And so that's something that, I hope is a clarion call to anyone who's trying to get out the vote or trying to, find a new base for 2020, both on the Republican and the Democratic side. There are folks out there that are not voting that are aligned with a more conservative platform and actually quite approving of President Trump and interested in reelecting him. So there's a lot of room for Republicans to capture new voters, as well as the same is true on the Democratic side, with a lot of folks dissatisfied with President Trump and ready for a change for 2020.
But looking at some of the data that's provided about non-voters and what they, if you go by issue, and they don't typically fall cleanly into Republican or Democrat. They may have some very socially progressive views in some areas, but then very conservative views in others. So I wonder if that might be a reason why they're reluctant to vote, because the parties don't actually fit nicely and tightly with their own worldview.
I would say that's probably part of it. We know from this study and others that have come before it that non-voters tend to be less, loyal partisans. The relational ties that they feel to a party are much weaker than, typical active voters. And that might be part of why it's hard for them to make a decision around candidates and issues, because the decision-making burden for them might feel higher. We talked to a lot of non-voters who felt like they needed to study the candidates and study the issues in order to make a decision, that they needed to spend time doing that. They weren't necessarily doing that. And so they were concerned that, and we heard this over and over, non-voters tell us that they felt uneducated, and they felt that an uneducated vote was worse than not voting at all. And that was kind of concerning to hear. And, I think a narrative that's, not healthy for our democracy and points to the need to get information into the hands of people that's digestible and easy and trustworthy, so that people don't feel like they have to jump such a high hurdle in order to go out and vote for the issues and candidates, at least that they care about.
To really boil it down, when you look at your study, looking at non-voters and how they would vote in 2020, it's pretty much split down the middle, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. There was the tiniest edge, perhaps, to the Democrat Party, just 3%. But it really is split down the middle. And you also have, a sizable chunk of voters more interested in voting for a third party candidate than for one of the two major parties. So again, pointing to the fact that, non-voters tend to be less partisan and perhaps less aligned to the platforms and issues that they're hearing a lot about in the media, perhaps another reason why they're less engaged with that.
Yvette Alexander is with the Knight Foundation and worked on the report, The 100 Million Project, The Untold Story of American Non-Voters. You can find a link to the report on our website, tpr.org. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You can also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can find past Texas Matters programs to listen to, and you can find us wherever you download your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.